on transportation, April 4th, 2005. Start by informing you that SJM 7 will be held over to till Wednesday. We will open a public hearing and we will open a work session on Senate Bill 70.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Bill 70 is the measure. We've heard once before. It would make a person ineligible for driving privileges if the person is affected by a mental or physical condition or impairment that affects the person's ability to safely operate motor vehicles. The measure further standardizes medical language relating to driving privileges. We have received a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact on the measure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Judith?
Mr. Chair, are we in the work session?
Yes.
Can I make a motion?
Yes, please.
I move Senate Bill 70 to the Senate floor with a two-pass recommendation.
Is there discussion? No. Clerk, call the roll, please.
Senator Nestor?
Aye.
Senator Zanetti?
Aye.
Senator Soto?
Aye.
Senator Whitfield?
Aye.
Chair Berger?
Absent. We probably should excuse the chair.
Wise choice.
So motion passes.
So Senate Bill 70 passes.
And we need a carrier.
And we need a carrier on that bill. Senator Prusansky. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 998, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Bill 998 increases the weight of motor vehicles from less than 8,000 pounds to less than 12,000 pounds for purposes including registration in the definition of Class 2 all-terrain vehicles and requires the vehicle to remain, and also that this change would allow that vehicle to remain in the right lane. The original bill did not apply to motor trucks or truck tractors. The effects of the Dash 1 amendments you have before you is to, in fact, include motor trucks. They're trying to capture pickup trucks, that sort of thing, to do this increase in the weight limit as far as the definition of Class 2 all-terrain vehicles. And we have a potential revenue impact statement on this measure. See, and we have a minimal fiscal impact. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Judith. Can I call Mr. Darrell Fuller and Mr. Daniel Fuller, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Darrell Fuller. I represent the Oregon Auto Dealers Association. I'll briefly describe why we brought the bill forward, and then I have some expert testimony. As you can see from the testimony that I've distributed, Oregon law says that any vehicle on the road that weighs more than 8,000 pounds has to have a commercial truck plate on it. That means that if you buy a vehicle that weighs less than 8,000 pounds and you load it up with lots of people and lots of groceries at Costco, if it weighs 8,000 and 2 pounds and you get pulled over, you should have a commercial truck plate on that vehicle. And there have been people that have been ticketed for being over 8,000 pounds with a passenger vehicle when there was a sting done this last summer. So we have introduced this bill to increase the minimum weight for a vehicle to have a commercial truck plate from 8,000 to 12,000 pounds, which will allow people to have the large SUVs, which are popular, and load them up on a family trip to the coast or go to Costco without potentially running afoul of the law. As the administrator mentioned, the way the bill was originally drafted, it would have exempted all pickups, and we want to make sure that we include pickups as well. And with me today is Daniel Fuller, who's the president of the Future Hummer Owners of Oregon Association.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Daniel Fuller. I am 9 years old and I am a third grader at Inglewood Elementary School in Salem. I am here today in support of Senate Bill 998. Boys love to play with trucks. Big trucks, small trucks, it really doesn't matter to us. We just love to play with our trucks. When boys get older, most seem to prefer big trucks. The bigger the better. I even attended a monster truck rally at the Rose Garden last year, but it was too loud to stay very long. Anyway, This bill will let a lot of big kids own big trucks without getting a ticket for having the wrong kind of license plate. Please let the big boys play with their big trucks and vote for Senate Bill 998. Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. Very good.
Answer any questions you have.
Any questions?
Yes, I have a question for Daniel. Daniel, are you a registered lobbyist?
Haven't reached 24 hours yet.
Haven't reached 24 hours yet.
Oh, thank you. We'll keep an eye on that.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yep, Mr. Chair.
Senator Pazowski.
I also have a question for Daniel Fuller. Daniel, since you get to play with trucks, what size trucks do you get to play with now?
You have a remote control car sizes.
How big is your biggest?
How big is that?
It's about
that big.
It sounds like you might need a big one because you gave big testimony.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Anyone else who wanted to testify on SB 998? Close the public hearing on 998. Open a work session on Senate Bill 998.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Pazowski.
I'd like to make a motion to amend Senate Bill 998 with a dash one.
Senator Pazansky moves the dash one amendments dated 3/30/05 to Senate Bill 998. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Clerk, call the roll, please.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Senator Pazansky?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Woodson?
Aye.
Chair Boettcher?
Madam Mr. Chair, I think just for clarity, I will go ahead and move Senate Bill 998 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Perfect. Senator Pazansky. Any further discussion? Sir, call the roll, please.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Senator Pazansky?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Woodson?
Aye.
Senator Chair Berger?
Senate Bill 998 is carried. Motion is carried. May I have a carrier, please? Senator Starr.
Okay.
We're opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 1007. Judith?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Bill 1007 requires road safety inspections of intermodal chassis before the chassis leave any of our ports. It prohibits removing or tampering with inspection tags and punishes tampering by maximum imprisonment of 1 year, a fine of $6,250, or both. We have received no revenue impact. We're still waiting to hear from the fiscal office on Senate Bill 1007. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Judith. I call Lynn Lerbach, Michael Gardner, and Scott Zander, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Lynn Lerbach, and I'm a representative of the Joint Council of Teamsters, which is a governing body for the 9 local unions in the state of Oregon. We represent approximately 30,000 active and 20,000 retirees within the state of Oregon. We want to thank you for the opportunity to appear here today and speak in favor of Senate Bill 1007, which incidentally we should thank somebody for 007. shaken, not stirred, right? But anyway, the Teamsters Union has been and always will be concerned with truck safety on our Oregon highways. All of us here in this room have a mutual problem with this, and it's safety. Safety on our Oregon highways. I would hope together a mutual solution on Senate Bill 1007 will let us move forward and have safety on our highways. Let me paint you a little picture here. Every morning, hundreds of semi-trailer trucks begin snaking through the streets of Portland on their way to the Port of Portland to pick up an intermodal chassis with a container bound for an Oregon destination and beyond. When these drivers finally reach the end of the line at the port, they are supposed to be hooked up to a truck chassis that is safe to take on the highway. And safety should be the first priority. Considering the combined weight of the truck, chassis, and cargo container can weigh as much as 80,000 pounds and 102,000 pounds with special permits. However, the chassis bearing the load of this weight are often in deplorable condition, not safe for use on the public roads and highways. These are the issues my colleagues and myself are here to testify to this afternoon. We'll discuss the unsafe chassis and our plan for a chassis roadability inspection program, which is much needed. Under current law, the brunt of responsibility for compliance lies with the federal safety regulations concerning the maintenance of chassis and places the responsibility on the port drivers. This responsibility, however, is completely misplaced, as port drivers do not own, nor do they possess the authority or the ability to effectuate such compliance. Rather, these obligations initiate with and truly belong to the foreign-owned multinational conglomerates consisting of steamship lines and or ocean marine terminal operators. Those entities either own or are officially charged with maintaining such equipment. At the Port of Portland, for example, Terminal 6, more than 278,000 cargo containers are processed each year. Each container is loaded on a chassis. A tour of the intermodal chassis yard, where port drivers return and pick up chassis, you'll find rows of unsafe chassis awaiting repair. And note here that the unsafe chassis are stored in the same rows as roadworthy safe chassis, and they're tagged. Many times drivers, because of expediency or lack of knowledge of the port's color-coded system for repairs, take an unsafe chassis. Unsafe chassis should be separated and stored in a separate lot. Drivers should not have access ever to unsafe equipment. I've submitted along with my testimony to you some pictures in your folders up there. I'd just like to briefly discuss them. On page number one, that picture you see is a leaking seal bearing, which could cause that wheel to leave the vehicle. On page one, a connector pin, which there's one in each corner of the chassis, and that's what holds the container on the chassis. That particular pin is severely damaged. If you look at page two, the frame on the back chassis, as you can see, the front one straight, on the back chassis is severely bent. A number of the structural beams and welds are also cracked. Picture below it, the frame and rear end are bent on this truck chassis, and the two rear axles are also out of alignment, so it won't track right. On page three, that shows a bent frame and container connector pin again and fractures on the welds. In the other picture there, in the foreground, you'll see some reflector tape on the second chassis, and on the first chassis, there is none. Now, why is that important? Because when these chassis are traveling either early in the morning or at night, when the lights hit those, your lights, when you're on the highway, hit that chassis, it causes your attention right away. Without it, you can miss it if you're running alongside of it, too. Presently, chassis are only inspected upon arrival at the port. A port checker who is not a qualified certified mechanic performs a quick walk around looking for noticeable damage. He might spot a light knocked out, low tires, things like that, but he certainly doesn't get underneath the chassis to really look for the dangerous stuff. Any noticeable damage is documented and the checker affixes the appropriate color-coded tag to the chassis indicating needed repairs. As you will also see in the exhibits, and I just covered that, some of the chassis are in need of minor repairs, such as that missing reflector tape I referred to, while others suffer from more serious structural damage, such as bent or fractured frames. In addition, note the photo on page 4. This is where these federal regulations I referred to. Each one of those chassis has a plate on it that's a federal plate, and it requires it to be inspected at least once a year. The particular one in question is an out-of-date frame that was at the time was 9 months out of date. Now it's, that was March 2004, so that's over a year out of date that hasn't been inspected. So I think that is very noteworthy that, again, the feds don't take care of this problem, nor do they provide the way to do it for the state or the port. The port presently only has two qualified certified mechanics to repair chassis in the yard. They are not able to complete all repairs because of time limits set by the foreign-owned conglomerates and shipping companies. These companies control the cost of repairs and the time spent at it, which limits the port's ability to repair chassis properly. This is where a serious flaw in the system lies. While these chassis await repair, either by the port's two mechanics or sometimes by an off-site contractor, which they'll call in, no system exists to stop a driver from removing or ignoring the repair tag and using the chassis to haul a cargo container because, again, there is no system for inspecting the chassis when they exit the terminal with the container. No one inspects them then. While we hope the drivers take only roadworthy chassis, the nature of the low-paying container hauling industry dictates otherwise. Many drivers, as independent contractors, are paid as low as $30 a load. Any delay at the port comes out of their pocket. With no system in place to inspect the chassis and its load when it leaves the terminal, an environment exists where an unsafe chassis are operating on our public roads and highways. Drivers, again, under time restraints, can and do take unsafe chassis from the yard, endangering the driving public, and that's you and I and your kids and my kids. Let me note here, in one incident, an unsafe chassis caused the death of 6 children when a piece of the chassis fell off on the road, bounced up underneath the car behind it, ruptured the fuel tank, it exploded and burst into flames, killed 6 children. The insurance company reporting the incident stated, "The interchanging of chassis in the United States has taken on a new meaning in recent years, with chassis suffering bits falling off. because of lack of inspection. Yet there's no incentive for the port industry to correct this problem because most port drivers, as independent contractors, are paid by the load, not by the hour. And the port's part is limited, again, on repairs and time by the shipping industry, and they are not properly reimbursed by the foreign-owned shipping companies. What can we do? We can do something, I think. The port has the responsibility to do everything it can to ensure its end of the bargain, in getting the containers to the marketplace in an efficient and safe manner for the protection of the driving public on all highways. The Port of Portland needs your help. The port needs enabling state legislation to ensure they have the authority and they are paid appropriately by the foreign-owned shipping companies for maintaining an efficient inspection repair roadability program on the port sites. Sure. They have the facilities and they have the qualified mechanics to do it. They need your help and authority to do it. We propose that this legislation requires the ocean marine terminal operators to implement an intermodal chassis roadability program, inspection program, to certify that chassis have been inspected and approved prior to being released for operation on public highways. In addition, any citation issued for the violation of any state or federal law related to the defective equipment of an intermodal chassis be issued to the entity responsible for the inspection, maintenance, and/or dispatch of the intermodal chassis. This legislation aims to move enforcement upstream, focus not so much on the port drivers. We do believe they have to be very careful in their inspection of the equipment. But they're vulnerable to reprisals or termination if they complain too loudly about long wait times, turn down safe chassis, or refuse to haul an overload weight. Rather, it is the shipping companies and marine terminal operators who should receive the attention of the state and local enforcement action because they control the port operation. They own the equipment and are responsible for its maintenance and repair, and they should be held accountable for sending safe equipment on the road. In conclusion, I want to say the foreign-owned shipping industry through our port system must be held accountable for public safety while operating on Oregon streets and highways. Legislation that will hold the foreign-owned shipping companies accountable is not unique to the Port of Portland. It is an issue facing all of our nation ports handling cargo containers. Similar legislation as we are proposing to you has been signed into law in the state of California. And we're glad to get those bills for you that were passed down there. Federal legislation concerning this issue has been talked for and discussed at the federal level for five to six years with no results. They can't reach a conclusion because of the foreign-owned shipping conglomerates. It's just a mess on the federal level. The Fed's inaction regarding this important safety issue is what brings us before you today. The citizens of the state of Oregon have a right to know that if the federal law won't protect them, the state of Oregon will. This committee has in its hands the power to recommend proactive safety legislation, protecting the safety of the driving public and our environment. Let's work together to make it happen. I think we can. Again, thank you for your time and consideration in this important matter. And my colleagues from the Longshoremen would like to make a statement also. Thank
you. Mr. Lerbeck, I have a couple of questions for
you.
Yes, Mr. Who owns the chassis?
The shipping lines.
Shipping lines, too.
The shipping lines own the chassis.
And then the second question, sir, we have obviously have ports in Washington, California, and Oregon on the West Coast. And if we have a particularly coded set of tags that come out of the ports in Oregon. How are you going to enforce with any regularity those that come in from California or those that come in those chassis that cross the line from Washington?
Well,
do you have some plan for that type of enforcement?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would leave that to my brothers. They know more about it as they're right on the port facilities, and one is a qualified mechanic. I would add, Mr. Chairman, though, that as these trucks come and go, and that's what we're talking about, when they come in, they only get a minor check through. And as they leave, they get no one inspects them on the way out. And therefore, if a program is established, I think my brothers here speak to that.
Yeah, because the chassis come in from the rail. Sometimes they'll come in by ship.
Identify yourself on the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Scott Zander, and I'm a mechanic at Marine Terminals at Terminal 6. And just to answer your question, like I said, we get chassis coming in from all over the place. And we want to start a program where, like I said, they get inspected in, but mainly we want to get them inspected out. That way we can have the pit crew right there, handle any repairs, and if it's really dangerous, then we keep it in the yard and let the shipping line know exactly what's wrong with it and what it needs and takes to get repaired.
Thank you.
Chairwoman Verger and members of the committee, I'm Michael Gardner. I'm a Portland Longshoreman. I'm on the Labor Relations Committee. I'm here to present my testimony for Leo Sundant, who's the president of Local 8. He apologizes for not being able to be here, but he's at the caucus down south. Local 8 represents the workforce that loads and unloads intermodal shipping containers to and from ocean-going vessels at the Portland terminals. Work of longshoremen and women also includes the maintenance and repair of the container and all equipment associated with the handling of the container, which includes the intermodal chassis. On behalf of Local 8, I support SB 1007 as written. Nobody can argue that as a result of the disrepair, an immediate safety problem exists within our transportation network. I urge you to ask anybody who opposes the subject bill, if they honestly believe that the chassis fleet is being responsibly and adequately maintained relative to road safety. Intermobile chassis are used to transport shipping containers over the public roads. The container is owned or leased by the ocean carrier, which is also the steamship company. A shipper books the container and arranges to have it filled. Over 90% of the intermobile chassis, as referenced by the bill, are owned by the steamship companies that operate and own the container vessels. The chassis is effectively borrowed by the trucking company or an independent driver when transporting the container. Most of the road movement of containers is done by so-called independent truck drivers with little assets who are paid by the trip. The more trips the driver makes, the more money he or she will earn. The DOT requires annual inspections of the chassis, but a simple survey of the fleet will show that this is not even being done. Even so, an annual inspection alone is inadequate to ensure real-time roadability. There's a black hole when it comes to maintenance management of intermobile chassis. It is not getting done. The driving on Oregon's roads is unsafe. SB 1007 will put the onus where it belongs on the foreign carriers that own the chassis and lend the usage for their purpose. Today, ODOT can set up an inspection point outside of Port of Portland's container terminal and attempt to accomplish the same thing that the bill is designed to do. The state does not do it, however. It does not have the resources to do it, and the few times that it has been done in the past has resulted in effective closure of the terminal within a half hour. Simply, once the word gets out, the truck drivers, they quit carrying the loads. They go elsewhere, do other jobs. Such in and of itself, it's a statement on the road ability of the equipment. SB 1007 narrowly defines a port as a facility that engages in the loading and unloading of ocean-going vessels carrying intermodal freight containers. The additional cost to the port for increased inspection would be minimal and would be readily passed on to its terrorists where it belongs, the chassis owner steamship companies. SB 1007, while not perfect, is a reasonable solution to the problem. While not every chassis enters the port every day because of its purpose is whole, associated ultimately within moving containers to and from marine vessels, at some point, the chassis will enter a marine terminal where it will be inspected. The chassis will be inspected multiple times in a day, while other chassis may be inspected once a year, depending on how often they are used. In any case, SB 1007 will go a long way with no cost to the public. I'd like to thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Gardner. Are there questions for this panel?
I do have one.
Senator Metzger.
Just one thought on this, and any of you could pitch in on this. This approach that you have certainly, I think, you know, would be effective in getting to, you know, the issue that you have brought and heard this before, and I think it is a very legitimate issue. Another approach would be is to change the law to make those owners responsible with extremely heavy penalties if out on the road those are identified. Because that would then, I would think, if the penalty was severe and the responsibility was not the driver but the person who had that owned that chassis, that would almost mandate unofficially everything in this, because they couldn't afford to take the risk of having that chassis caught out on the highway in any of these conditions. I was just wondering about I guess more of the nuance of the certain approach to how you put this together, recognizing that this certainly does that as well. But
certainly, Chair Woodsett and Senator Metzger, that's a good thought and a good idea. And the last time we presented testimony concerning this, ODOT did come with us. ODOT was at first said, look, let the feds handle it. But after we walked through this, Bruce Warner come on and agree with us, the state has to become somehow involved. Now, he also testified that 60% of these chassis at one time have been put out of service going through the weigh stations. Mm-hmm. So penalties could be increased on them. That would certainly help the whole problem. But going backwards on it, the best place to catch them is in the yard, repair them on site, because these longshoremen are qualified to do it. Therefore, that chassis itself doesn't hit the roadway and cause, because it can. It has, in the past, killed people out there on the highways. So that's the seriousness of it. But, I welcome your remarks on it.
Right.
Thank you, sir.
I'll follow up there.
Yes, please.
I think the thing I was thinking of, Lynn, is that you've talked to them, because they do go, through these weigh stations, and if they inspect them there, that I know the arguments, and you can say we may hear them again today, that, this is, costly, and things, we have a way to manage this inside the yard. But one way to get around that is if you assume that on prima facie, you're doing a fine job, then we don't have any problem to worry about when that thing is found at a weigh station and there's a huge penalty. Because, I would just think that, then I'm going to have to take the proper steps in the yard because I can't afford to have that caught. And as you said, 60% of them are discovered at these different weigh stations. I'm operating that port, or I'm a steamship operator. I know that if that shows up there, I'm in bad shape, that I'm probably going to take care of the problem inside that yard because I can't afford to have that happen. I guess it's just another way to get at the argument that, we're managing things fine, because if we're managing things fine, then they're not going to have any problem with huge penalties at the weigh station.
I think my brother mechanic could speak to issues right in the yard that just happen all the time. But it isn't the port's fault itself. It's that the port is not reimbursed with enough money from the shipping lines to do an adequate job at the port level.
But I would, yeah, but I would think when, I mean, just if I could follow up that, I would think, I understand that, but I would think then that would really put the port in a situation where they're going to work with those shipping companies to have the resources necessary to do this because they can't afford to have that business, you know, go away.
That's a good point.
I mean, it gets to the same result, and I'm not sure that's saying that's a better way, but I have heard the arguments in the past, and we may hear them today. I'm just saying, okay, then you don't mind being held liable very severely, you know, down the road. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Zander, you had a written testimony. Did you have oral testimony also?
Yes, I do. Thank you. Chairman and committee members, my name is Scott Zander, and I live in Aloha, Oregon. I've been employed by Marine Terminals Corporation at Terminal 6, Port of Portland, for 3.5 years, and before that, I was a mechanic on the docks of Los Angeles for 17. I support Senate Bill 1007 because I see many chassis that are not inspected and are damaged still being used on the road and public highways in Oregon. It's a constant struggle by mechanics to keep unsafe chassis from leaving and returning to the road. There's no law prohibiting their usage. Drivers just keep using them. Based upon my LA experience, after a chassis was inspected and tagged for repair, many times a driver would walk up and tear the tag off immediately, park it in the yard, and that way he wouldn't get billed, because down the line, billing happens and liability. Just like if you rented a trailer from U-Haul and you wrecked it or did something, what would happen? You get a bill. Okay, and it got so bad in L.A., after lawsuits, people got hurt by these chassis over time, that every chassis was inspected in and out of the yard to make sure nothing was damaged. The Port of Portland is a public entity, and they must acknowledge this is a public hazard. The Port of Portland is in a unique position to make sure that the bad order or damaged chassis are stopped at the gates, and Senate Bill 100 does that. Let me see. The whole issue reminds me, people like with people at a bar, they serve until they get drunk and send them on the way. They know there's a problem, but they don't take that responsibility and they let it happen. And that's the same kind of thing that's happening here. Okay, a couple of months ago at Terminal 6, here's an example. A Marine clerk notified the mechanics that a chassis was making a very unusual sound. So they called us on the radio, said, come on by. So we drove over there. They'd just taken a 40-foot load off this guy's trailer. We looked at it, and the front axle was broken off, slapping around. All right, so the guy said, hey, can I get another empty container back out? And I said, no way. You know, you're out of your mind. So I said, how far did you come from the Salem area? All right, so we called ODOT. They came out, took pictures, and they appreciated us stopping this guy. And they called the owner of the trailer and said, you either get it fixed here at Terminal 6, or you put it on a flatbed, and they take it somewhere else to get repaired. This driver was nice about it, but in the past, I've had problems. Security guards have had problems. I've literally had to jump in front of a truck driver to keep them from leaving the chassis yard because I was working on it and I had to run back to get parts. I left a little sign on it that said, please do not use. I'm working on it. This guy's hooked up and he's leaving out of the way, so I got to pull up and jump out. And he says, you better get out of the way or I'm going to run you over. I deal with this all the time. You know, I want to work on this stuff and I want to keep the public safe. And I want to have equipment for these drivers to use too. You know, it's a big problem. And if we're lucky, 20% or 30% of the trucks get inspected on a regular basis. I'll have many more examples and gladly tell you about it if you want me to. This bill is very necessary to help us do our job and keep Oregon highways safe. Thank you, Chair and committee members, for listening to my concerns.
Thank you, Mrs. Andrews. Are there further questions for this group? Thank you.
Thanks.
Oh, Kevin Clark and Rick Christensen, please. Welcome, gentlemen. Begin when you're ready.
Chairman Whitsett, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Clark, and I represent the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, Local 40, Supercargos and Clerks. Beginning in 1974, when the largest marine container terminal in Oregon opened, the clerks in the ILWU, Local 40, have performed the function of inspection of chassis at the Port of Portland's Terminal 6. We have performed the service at the insistence of the steamship lines to ensure that their equipment is operational for delivery only. It was not intended that this function was for public safety, but rather a function of roadability. Nevertheless, this inspection, which we have performed, ensures safety to the communities in which we live. We currently inspect the brakes, suspension system, tires, wheels, mud flaps, connections, as well as landing gear and several other items, for a total of 26 inspection points for which a damage report is generated. That is attached to the report along with the FHWA. Recently, however, we have been instructed to stop this service on behalf of the Port Authority. We take serious exception to these instructions because we and our families drive the same roads as these chassis. The Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration mandates that all chassis be inspected. However, there is still no clear mandate as to how to implement the inspections to satisfy the Department of Transportation. Both parties involved, the carriers and the owners of the chassis, try to pass this important safety issue onto each other, while who have in fact performed this inspection, go about our jobs to ensure that a neutral inspection is indeed carried out. The inspections that we have performed are only a small percentage of the chassis which actually enter the terminals. At Terminal 6 in Portland, we inspect about 100 chassis per day. We have experienced a damage rate of 20%, which are repaired before going back on the road. It must be pointed out that at Terminal 6 in Portland processes up to 800 containers a day, of which only 100 chassis are left at the terminal for inspection. The remaining 700 come in and leave the terminal on the same round trip and are not inspected. If the percentages hold true, this would mean that 140 damaged chassis travel the roads each day with you and me for just this one terminal. One of the most blatant issues of safety, the brakes, are under constant stress since some truckers tighten up the brakes on the chassis in order to prolong the brakes on their trucks. This is a huge issue of safety which we can inspect and repair with the right certifications. We continue to believe that the best point of inspection is at the terminals, where all chassis dealing with marine cargoes will eventually come. This does not include any out-of-state chassis which travel our roads. That number would be in the thousands. We as members of this state are not interested in who has to pay for repairs, but rather who doesn't have to pay with their lives. The only thing that is missing is certification of inspection for the people that have been doing this work for over 31 years. We find this to be a public safety issue and would very much encourage the committee to refer this to the full Senate for approval. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today.
Thank you. Go ahead, please.
My name is Rick Christensen. I do the inspections right now at T6 before the mechanics. The chassis that come into Terminal 6 I see every day the majority are quite old chassis. It's real questionable the condition, even though they've had an inspection FHWA within sometimes a month, and you can question how they ever pass inspections. But It's something that needs to be done for the safety of our children. I've got children. You have children. We're only inspecting the few that are dropped in our yard. Lately, I've been working the outbound booth, switching with another fellow, and I'm seeing chassis leave with no marker lights, missing marker lights. These are the ones that have come into our terminal and are not inspected, that turn around and go back out the gate again with another load. I've seen them with no reflectors, privately owned chassis that are not roadable, the taillights out on them, and at the moment we have no right to stop them that I know of, to prevent them from going off the gate. And these gentlemen usually will haul the same chassis all day long, continuous in and out of the terminal, and no repairs are done. And there's no inspection in or out for them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kevin, I just want to go back to your testimony on the third paragraph. You said on the inspection that you have been doing, that you were instructed to stop the service of this inspection form on behalf of the Port Authority. You mean the Port of Portland told you not to do this?
Yes.
Okay. And then what was their reason for asking you not to do that?
We never really got a reason, and we objected to it strenuously. We still do the inspections today because we got into a labor dispute over the issue because we feel it's a strong enough safety issue that we've got to stand our ground. And we continue to do that today, but they have told us, I frankly don't know why, to be honest with you, Senator. It's been an issue of they're doing some upgrading on the facility and they may be wanting to get rid of the chassis in the yard altogether to make some space. I frankly don't know why they would want us to do it or not do it anymore.
Well, I assume we're going to have an opportunity to hear from the port on that. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Pradansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Clark, I also want to follow up on your testimony. It's on the second page of the text. You talk about one of the most blatant safety issues, and you're talking about the brakes and how some truckers will tighten up the brakes on the chassis in order to prolong the brake on their rig. Can you walk me through how that's done? I'm not familiar enough with the brake system on the chassis, how they're tightening them down in the bike.
Let me refer you to Rick. He knows the inspection process better.
Most truck drivers aren't qualified to do the brakes on their own trucks, on the trailers. They're drivers. They come right out of school and become truck drivers. I get a lot of the fellows that come in, and we've heard statements from other drivers in the past that they want to save their brakes in their truck, and if brakes are weak on the trailer, they need to adjust them up so that they grab, and it's not safe for them to be on the road if the trailer brakes won't hold the load back when you've got 80,000 pounds and your truck brakes are all you have to stop with. And we get chassis in our terminal where the axles, even though they set the brakes, one or both axles will still turn. Without even a load on the container, or without a load on the chassis.
Mr. Chairman, please. I'm familiar with the drum brakes. I don't know what these have in the sense of how you tighten down and make the adjustments.
There's a little bolt that they can adjust the brakes tight. They can either tighten the brakes up like on a car or loosen.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Call Pat Egan, Robin Freeman, and Ken Armstrong, please.
Good afternoon. I think I'll go first. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Pat Egan, and I'm here today on behalf of the Port of Portland, and thank you for the opportunity. A couple of things just at the outset, and then I'll get through the rest of my testimony. What I'm circulating to you is actually a section of H.R. 3, which has already passed the United States House in the Congress. As Mr. Lehrbach pointed out, this has been an issue that's been bouncing around for a while, but actually there is federal action that's been taken in the House. Not aware whether the Senate version is going to incorporate that or not. And this is in the reauthorization bill of the federal transportation appropriation. So we believe that for a variety of reasons, that's where the responsibility lies in an even application, and that's really our objection to Senate Bill 1007. I've signed up in opposition, but I want to say at the outset, obviously, we recognize that safety is a major issue. We do have, as you've heard, inspections done at the terminal, although not to every chassis that comes through. I will add that. But what our objections are really to Senate Bill 1007 are that many of the points that you've heard today about safety would not necessarily be addressed even if Senate Bill 1007 was fully passed. And let me run you through a couple of those. There's an uneven application under that's proposed in Senate Bill 1007. First of all, it only applies to the Port of Portland. We have a variety of containers obviously running through our facility, hopefully more in the near future, and I think that's hopefully shared by everybody in the room. But there are a variety of private container facilities that deal with truck-to-truck containers and rail-to-truck containers in the state of Oregon, private container yards that Senate Bill 1007 would not apply to. So, again, only applies applies to a public facility, and really, at the end of the day, only applies to us because under the definition of ports, I think we're the only port that would actually fit, although Ken, I think, is going to tell you about concerns from some of the other ports with the legislation. Secondly, it only applies somewhat in the state of Oregon, and by somewhat, what I mean is there would, even with the application of Senate Bill 1007, be a variety of chassis that would be carrying containers to and from ports that would not be come under the regulation of Senate Bill 1007. And as Mr. Lehrbach did, I'll paint my own picture. Imagine a container dock someplace out there. Two chassis lined up one against the other. Let's say it's in Salem. One chassis headed up, both of them headed up I-5. One takes a left turn, goes to our facility at Terminal 6 on Marine Drive there. The other proceeds northbound on I-5 and heads to the Port of Tacoma. With Senate Bill 1007, and actually I would say if we received the chassis today, there would be an inspection of the chassis coming into the Port of Portland. The chassis that's heading northbound to the Port of Tacoma, let's say, would not receive a similar inspection under this legislation. It would under the federal legislation that you're taking a look at. The chassis that went into the Port of Portland obviously would be inspected then, would be repaired if that was necessary. That chassis that goes up to Port of Tacoma could circulate right back into Northern California, Idaho, or Medford, someplace in Oregon, and then go right back up to the Port of Tacoma. So that same chassis with some of those same problems that have been identified would not have an inspection under Senate Bill 1007. And really my point here is that motor carrier safety is under federal regulation today, and we believe that's where at least the authority ultimately should stay. One related point here is that, as you pointed out, Senator Whitsitt, the chassis themselves are owned by the steamship companies. Most of them are, although not all of them. There are some private chassis and there are some other chassis, but the bulk of them are owned by the steamship companies. They are not registered motor carriers, and so the regulation that's proposed under Senate Bill 1007 kind of misses the mark because there's no ticket that can be pulled under that. A couple other things that I just want to highlight before I turn it over, and again, I'd be happy to talk with you about the federal legislation if you would like. The federal legislation obviously does not distinguish between public and private facilities. It applies to all motor carrier, all chassis in interstate commerce, and it doesn't disadvantage one state or one region versus another. We would see Senate Bill 1007, as was noted, the State Department of Transportation doesn't necessarily have the funds lying around to do this. We wouldn't either. If there was an even application, if every chassis had to be inspected, if all steamship companies had to pay for the inspection and repair up and down the coast and around the United States, we believe there would be even application and they would be ultimately paid for. Fact is, we could bill them today and they wouldn't necessarily have to pay. So for that reason, we would see that as an unfunded mandate. The last couple of provisions here are on the last page of the bill require that a port would have to inspect any truck, regardless of whether we're actually receiving a container or putting a container out, at the request of the driver. So it could be a private individual, again, with no recourse or our ability to charge that individual for the inspection and the repair. With that, I'll close my testimony and turn it over and happy to take any questions.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Ken Armstrong, representing the Oregon Ports Group. Very briefly, I'm here to echo what Mr. Egan has said. Port of Portland is a member of the Oregon Ports Group. The two ports outside of the Port of Portland that are most directly involved with this issue would be the ports of Umatilla and Morrow, which, as part of the upriver barge network, are involved with the containers that come down the river through the Port of Portland and then out through the rest of the transportation network. And they share the exact same concerns, recognition that there's federal legislation that's dealing with this issue that is moving forward, and on their behalf, I would echo what Mr. Egan has said and indicate our opposition to Senate Bill 1007.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I've handed out some testimony prepared by Greg Del Ponte, the administrator of the Motor Carrier Transportation Division. He apologized he couldn't be here this afternoon. What I'd like to do is just cover a couple points that he made in his testimony. And our testimony today from the Department of Transportation focuses on a very small section of this bill, Section 6, Subsection 3. And this bill calls for inspectors who find a defective chassis to notify ODOT for purposes of suspending the owner's operating authority. The department would then notify USDOT for other action necessary against interstate authority. But since the owner of most chassis are shippers, not motor carriers, there is no operating authority to suspend. Also, restrictions on the use of highway funds prohibit the department from taking action against any shipper. And we're talking ocean-going shipper. Even if a chassis owner were a motor carrier, it's not possible for Oregon to suspend interstate operating authority, since virtually all intermodal containers move in interstate commerce. It would be ineffective to suspend the interstate authority. The Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration is the only governmental entity that could take action against the interstate motor carrier or shipper. Further, on the last page of the testimony, the second page, Mr. Del Ponte points out that last month it was reported that the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration aimed to propose a rule in September 2005 that would mandate which companies, ocean and rail carriers or trucking companies, would be responsible for the safety of intermodal chassis. And as a follow-up to that, today on the ATA, which is the American Trucking Association's website, they had posted a notice that was titled Consensus Reached on Roadability Legislation, in which the American Trucking Association says its Intermodal Motor Carriers Conference, the Ocean Carrier Equipment Management Association, and the Association of American Railroads have agreed on federal legislation establishing federal requirements covering the systemic maintenance, repair, inspection, and shared responsibility of intermodal equipment. Beyond the political importance of having intermodal equipment, providers now joining motor carriers and acknowledging and supporting the need for federal intermodal equipment safety legislation/regulations. This will provide a clear direction and framework for Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration during the ensuing equipment safety review and promulgation process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm bothered by your testimony, and I will tell you that. Because what I'm hearing on this issue, we've had folks articulate serious safety issues. But rather than address safety issues, we're all talking about, I can't do this because of them, or this is an issue we don't have jurisdiction over, or basically we just can't solve this problem. And not one of your pieces of testimony, and I say this respectfully, has dealt with the issue of why there seems to be no concern over the safety of these chassis that have been articulated by the proponents. And I understand and respect some of this and some of the issues we would have to do to try and resolve the problem. But what bothers me is there's been no articulation from this panel that there is any problem at all. And I would like a response to that. I mean, I can understand how we can confuse an issue, even legitimately have issues of why we can't deal with it, but to totally ignore some of the what appears to be, at least on its face, serious safety issues on the highway, no one seems to have addressed that at all.
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, I appreciate your pointing that out. And if I missed the safety element, and I apologize for that. Obviously, we do care a great deal about safety. And as was indicated, there are up to 100 inspections done daily at the Portland terminal. Today, right now, we're looking at more like 450 to 500 total transactions. So it's in the neighborhood of 20% today. Obviously, we do care a great deal about safety. And Mr. Wyatt, our executive director, met with Leal Sunday on Friday to talk about this issue because we do take it very seriously. I guess the point of my testimony that I was trying to get across was we do see safety as a primary issue, which is why I think it's important enough that it should be applied across both private and public container facilities and for every state. Certainly we have responsibility for those chassis that are coming across our facility to make sure that they're done. We also at the same time though want to make sure sure that the safety that is taken, when we do take care of safety, it's across the board, and it's not just those chassis coming into our facility. Because, as I think I mentioned to you before, there is a competitive element to this, not discounting the safety issue at all. But if they're only done at the Port of Portland, and they're not, the inspections only done at the Port of Portland, and they're not done to our neighbors to the north, that does become a competitive issue in terms of the cost, the addition of labor we would have to do to make sure that all of that work is done.
I have a follow-up, Mr. Chair. Please. Could you respond to Mr. Clark's comment regarding his testimony that they were instructed to stop their inspection service by the port, and if so, if that's accurate, and if so, why?
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, I'm not sure that I can. I did have with me last Wednesday when the bill was up, Lee Roundtree, who's our Terminal 6 manager, and I believe he would have been able to. I'm not entirely familiar enough with the situation to know anything more than there may have been a bargainable issue, I guess, over labor, but I don't know, and I could certainly get back to you.
We appreciate that.
You bet.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question I have is liability. Pat, you just said that, you know, that the port's responsible for chassis safety, but are you really? Who's ultimately liable if there's an accident because, you know, you got, you know, as he showed, you know, as Lynn showed us these pictures of these accidents, of the, you know, chassis that are bent or, you know, out of alignment or cracks, you know, one of these things cracks, you know, you have an axle come out from under and wipes out a cars or whatever. Who ultimately is financially liable for that? Is it the port, or is it really the shipper who owns the chassis, or is it the truck driver? Who's financially at stake here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I think the first answer I'd have to give you is that it's probably somewhat on a case-by-case basis. I think the true answer is the owner of the chassis is probably in the most responsible position, I guess, in a financial sense, if that's your question about if there's an accident after the fact. I'm not familiar enough to know with the litigation that's been mentioned here to know how that's been resolved in the courts. I would imagine, though, that the courts would sort that out. As to the port's responsibility in a financial sense, I don't know that we would. I don't know that we wouldn't. I can't tell you that, but I'd be happy to answer the question and check with our folks in our Marine Division to get back to you.
Mr. Chair, it seems like that's the crux of the question. I mean, who's responsible for these chassis? And, you know, if there's a liability there, they ought to be the ones that are responsible for making sure they're safe. How they travel around the, you know, the shipping network is a concern. If it's the port's the only place that the clearinghouse where you can get all of the critical mass there to do the checking and do the repairs or whatnot, maybe that's the right place, the right answer. But I think we need some more questions answered. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Couple of things. I think Senator Starr, it seemed like anyone and everyone that's within the line of having any oversight over that chassis is going to be sued. I mean, the bottom line is that you're going to sue everyone and let get sorted out by the courts. And it would seem to me that port could be on hold. I don't know what tort liability would be as a public entity, but if they knew that something was going on and they had knowledge of it, as compared to the owner, until the owner has knowledge, unless there's some requirement that they have due diligence to make sure everyone in their chassis always stays in compliance. So I'd say no one's on the hook until they get in court. But I guess for Mr. Egan and Mr. Armstrong, if the feds fail to follow through with either what we have here is H.R. 3 or any other type of legislation, I mean, aren't we really neglecting our duty? And I understand it should be across the board. And it shouldn't be just the public entity or the public force, but all of them should have that requirement. And it just seems to me that we're sitting here, as Senator Metzger says, we're pointing our fingers and saying, well, if Tacoma doesn't have to do it, then we're at a competitive disadvantage, so we shouldn't have to do it. But the reality, we may end up having someone dead because we didn't take care of a problem or black flag or whatever it would be on a chassis that we knew shouldn't go out.
Mr. Chair, Senator Prusansky, if I could just address a couple of things. One, I think the variability or the potential for variability state to state really is part of the answer to your question. It was mentioned that California has a similar bill. My understanding from actually Leo Sundit, who I talked with last week about this, is it's a weaker version of this bill. Haven't actually seen the legislation myself. I have checked in Washington State. To my knowledge, there's no similar bill that's been proposed up there. And exactly your point, this liability issue. So if it was, if it was that second chassis that I mentioned, and it was on an Oregon road, had gone through the Port of Tacoma, had not been had the, that type of inspection, where would the liability lie with that chassis versus one that had been, let's say, with Senate Bill 1007, gone through the Port of Portland, had been inspected, but there was still a problem. I think that, again, to me, really screams out to a national, nationwide application. Again, not to duck the safety issue at all. I think precisely for that reason, we there should be federal legislation. Last thing, I guess, I would say about Senate Bill 1007. To your point here, then it absolutely should apply to both public and private yards, any place, because their Senator Starr, I believe, is right. We would see the bulk of those chassis over what period of time. I'm not confident, but a lot of those chassis could be outside of our reach for long periods of time without any inspection whatsoever, which I would think might actually make the situation worse.
One on follow up, please. And Ms. Freeman, this is really for you. I guess what I'm kind of surprised to understand that we can't pull the certificate on these rigs because they're not licensed regularly. But clearly, if we got ODOT out and we saw a chassis that was a hazard to public travel and safety, we could tag it, and that truck and that chassis is not moving until it's fixed, or they move the load over to another one and it's flatbedded out. Isn't that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Brzezinski, that's exactly right. I think in the testimony, I didn't cover this well, but we do cite for safety violations, and we do pull trucks off the road until those are repaired, and those do become the obligation of the trucker at that point. They have to repair those before they can get back on the road.
Mr. Freeman, could you discuss the scope of the problem that's identified by ODOT and law enforcement? Is this something that occurs on a daily basis or rarely? Or
Mr. Chair, I apologize because I'm not really familiar with motor carrier as much as I'm with DMV, as you may notice, because I'm here more for DMV. But I could certainly have the Motor Carrier Transportation Division get you some information about that. How often it occurs, if it's daily, and where we see that. I'd be happy to do that. Thank you.
Please do that. And Mr. Egan, could you compare the scope and the cost of the current inspection and who does it at your port compared to the scope of the inspection suggested by the proponents, and who would do those?
Mr. Chair, I can certainly make an attempt, and again, Lee Roundtree would probably be you'd be well served if he was here today. My understanding of the difference between what is done today and what would be proposed under Senate Bill 1007, obviously Senate Bill 1007 says anything coming in or going out is going to get an inspection. I believe, as I said, it's anywhere between 10% and 20% of the chassis that come in on a daily basis are actually inspected on a daily basis. I would think that over time, again, the same kind of dynamic would take over. You would actually get most of those inspected over time as they come in. I think Mr. Lehrbach had said that about 60% of those have been tagged at some point or another. That's everything from broken taillight to that tire needs to be replaced or something like that. The primary difference right now, it's a visual inspection. The visual inspection includes looking at the soundness of the frame, the taillights, as I said, tires, the axle, those kinds of things. The primary difference that I see in terms of the actual logistics of what's proposed in Senate Bill 1007 is the addition of the brake inspection, which is certainly more detailed than what is done today. My understanding is, unless it's requested to be inspected, that's not done as a matter of course today as it's proposed in Senate Bill 1007. In terms of the additional personnel and in terms of the cost there, I don't have a number for you, and I wouldn't serve you well to speculate today. It would be substantially more than what we have today, I believe, but I don't know exactly what it would be.
Could you give us some information on that?
Sure, you bet.
Are there questions from the panel?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who wished to testify on Senate Bill 1007? If not, we'll close the hearing on 1007. Any further business for the committee today?
So you got time to get there for a little bit.
Close the committee.